Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to yet another edition of ITE 1 Class 1. And this is Chapter 7, Printers and Scanners and all those wonderful things. Okay, basically it's called printers, but it's printers and scanners. A printer is an output device which takes text from the computer and deposits it onto paper. A scanner is an input device which takes print or images from paper and deposits it into the computer. Today you'll learn about both devices, how they work, how to choose an appropriate device for a customer, as well as how to install and configure, maintain and troubleshoot them. Okay, and the first thing you need to look at is types of printers, because there are quite a few types out there and it will depend on customer need and budget and all those wonderful things as to what you will choose for yourself or for a customer. Now, as a computer tech, you might need to select, i.e. purchase a printer, install, configure, maintain and troubleshoot it. So it's handy to know what there is and which printer you might like. And yeah, there is a sort of subjective thing in it as well, because some people really like lasers and other people really anti-inkjet and all those sorts of things. So hey, it depends on all those things. Okay, the characteristics and capabilities of printers. Whether you select a laser printer, an inkjet or a dot matrix printer, and they are still out there in use because they're particularly good for carbon copies, you'll need to look at the following criteria. The first one is capacity and speed. Inkjet printers are usually slower than laser printers, but they might be okay for a home or a small office situation. The speed of a printer is measured in pages per minute, ppm. The speed of a printer is measured in pages per minute, ppm. The speed of an inkjet printer usually
I'll remember that.
6 ppm. Oh, good. Yes,
that's Peter, cool. Paul and Mary.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, that's a good way of remembering it, actually. I didn't think of that. And the speed of a laser printer is between 8 and 200 pages a minute per minute. Cool, I never seen a 200 ppm laser printer, but I suppose they're out there. So when we're talking about capacity and speed, we're talking about, in most cases, pages per minute. There are exceptions, and we'll get to them later when we talk about other printers. Yep.
That'd be nearly as fast as a photocopier.
Yep, I'd say so. Okay, the next criterion we're looking at is colour or black and white. What does your customer need, a colour or a black and white printer? Now, a computer monitor produces colours through the additive mixing of dots that are displayed on the screen. The eye picks up the colours directly. The dots produce the colour range using red, green and blue, RGB. And of course you all know that from having done that wonderful lab in Chapter 5. A printer, on the other hand, produces colours using subtractive mixing. The eye sees a colour that reflects from the combination of colours on the paper.
Which is subtractive.
Exactly, just as it says here. And they are cyan, magenta, yellow and clear. And there's a colour wheel on figure 2 in the section, if anyone is interested.
Jackie actually explained this quite well last year, actually. It was really good, the way she sort of said how the additive system from a monitor is variances of RGB, which you've just said, and you might remember that lab recently where everyone had to change the background colour. It's various numbers between 0 and 255 to get different combinations of colours, and all of it, red, green and blue are RGB. 255 of each of those three attributes is white, and with the subtractive system of the colours reflecting off the page, it's CMYK, and K is for black, incidentally, because if you use B, it's usually denoted as blue, so that's why they use CMYK, or K being for black.
Okay, now that you've known the difference, of course, we did a bit of this in Chapter 5 and Chapter 5 Lab when we exported the registry setting, we played around with the monitor, so this isn't totally unfamiliar. Okay, now, depending on who your customer is and what they're going to use the printer for will depend on whether you choose a colour or black and white for them. Now, black and white is fine for documents, but if you're in a school situation or a marketing situation, you might need colour. In fact, you will need colour. So really you need to look at who the customer is and what they're going to be using the printer for in terms of whether you choose black and white or colour. Yep.
Sorry, actually, hit the button, Kylie. Sorry.
Okay. You've got speed and capacity, you've got colour, and now quality. Now, the quality of printing is measured in dots per inch DPI. And of course, the more dots per inch, the higher the DPI, the greater the resolution. And of course, when the resolution is higher, the text and images are usually clearer. To produce the best high resolution images, you need to use both high quality ink or toner and high quality paper. Just as when you're cooking, better ingredients make for a better result, the same in printing. If you use better consumables, then your result is obviously going to be better. So you need to ask the customer what quality they're looking for. For instance, if they want to print photographs, they're going to need an inkjet printer. That's just a given. Laser printers are not very good at producing images. So if it's images that they want, then they will need an inkjet. Okay, we've talked about speed and capacity, colour, quality. Now, reliability. Obviously, you want a reliable printer. And if the customer's going to push their equipment hard, you'll need a printer that'll cope. And for that, you need to consult the manufacturer's website or the manual for the following criteria. First is the warranty. Now that's kind of important because it has all to do with whether you are going to touch the printer if it's really broken or not. It also has to do with industry certifications because to work on certain printers, lasers in particular, you need to be specially certified and we'll go into that later. But as far as the warranty is concerned, you need to know what's covered within the warranty, and I've added in here and what isn't, because often it's easy to assume that because you've got a list of things that are covered, that you can more widely interpret that to include things that perhaps you think are covered that might not be. So it's important to know what is covered under your warranty and what isn't. The next thing you need to consider is scheduled servicing. And that's based on the accepted usage. You need to look at that and see if that servicing is going to meet the requirements of the customer. If not, then you need to choose a printer that's going to have the servicing that the customer is going to be satisfied with. The next one is mean time between failure, MTBF. MTBF. What that means is that there's an average length of time that the printer is expected to work without failing. Now, all of those criteria above go into what we call the total cost of ownership. Now, when we buy a printer for home use, we usually don't think of that. We think of, okay, how much does the thing cost? How much are the consumables and maybe paper going to cost? And that's it. But if you're buying for an organisation in particular, you need to consider the TCO. And that includes the initial purchase price, the cost of supplies such as paper and ink, the price per page, the maintenance costs. Printers need a lot of maintenance because they have more moving parts than a computer does. Warranty costs. When calculating the TCO, you also need to consider the amount of material printed and the expected lifetime of the printer. So all those things need to be factored into your choice when you are buying a printer. Anyone, any questions so far? No, it's all pretty clear, isn't it really? Okay, let's look at interfaces. Typically, printers connect to home computers using a parallel USB or wireless interface. Actually, hardly any of them connect to parallel anymore, although I do have a parallel port that can be used for an older printer on this machine. Corporate printers mainly connect with Ethernet cable, network cable, but so do home printers these days. You will find if you have maybe different operating systems in your house that it will be easier to connect a printer to your router so that all of the computers on the network will be able to easily see that printer. And network printers are pretty cheap now. Okay, the first interface mentioned here is serial. Now, it's been a long time since I've seen a printer that's connected by a serial cable. But here we are. Serial data transfer is the movement of single bits of information in a single cycle. A serial connection can be used for dot matrix printers because the printers do not require high-speed data transfer. Yes, and I used to have a little Citizen. It was my first printer. It was a 9-pin job. That would have been in the late 80s, and that did connect via a serial port, as I remember. Anyone else remember those?
I had one something a little bit like that that I used to print from my Eureka to the printer.
Oh, you were a Eureka girl. I was a Keynote girl. That was my first thing. It was the old Keynote with a little ticker tape printer on it built in. And I had a little external dot matrix that I used for the job I was in at the time. Okay, parallel. Now, we need to spend a little bit of time on this because often you do get asked about parallel in your exam. And the exam I sat, I think there were about three questions on parallel ports and parallel standards. So parallel data transfer is faster than serial data transfer, obviously. Parallel transfer is the movement of multiple bits of information in a single cycle. The path is wider for information to move to and from the printer. The parallel standard is, does anyone remember what the standard is?
Sorry, Carly, did you need me for some?
I want to guess
John,
at 1283.
Almost. It's IEEE 1284. The parallel, the standard for parallel is IEEE 1284. Now, there are two types. There's enhanced parallel port, EPP, and enhanced capabilities port, ECP. And they're the two modes of operation within the IEEE 1284 standard that allow bi-directional communication. They allow bi-directional communication. That may be a test alert, so just remember that. EPP and ECP, and the standard is 1284. Now, you can also get printers that connect through a SCSI, which of course is a parallel, is a type of parallel communication. And then there's good old USB, which we all know because it's a universal connector and it works by plug and play. Hopefully it does anyway. It says here, when a USB device is added to a computer system supporting PNP, the device is automatically detected and starts the driver installation process. Now, warning, read your manual to discover when you're installing a printer or anything, when is the right time to put in the USB cable. If you don't do it at the right time, Windows will start installing the generic driver and it may conflict with a driver you've already installed. Or if you try to install the manufacturer's driver over the top, ta-ta machine. So just don't do it. Always follow the manufacturer's instructions when installing these things. Another popular peripheral connector is FireWire. And you'll see that mainly on Macs, although you can get it for Windows. It's a FireWire is also known as iLink, or IEEE, IEEE, what standard people? Can anyone remember? 1394. FireWire's IEEE standard 1394. And it's a high-speed communication bus that is platform-independent. And things that connect to FireWire are printers, scanners, digital cameras, and hard drives. And it also works, of course, by plug-and-play and can be hot-swappable. And we all know what hot-swappable is, don't we?
Means that you can use the safely remove hardware and take it in and out of the computer without having to turn the computer off.
Yep, exactly. Now, the maximum number of connections that you can have on one FireWire port is 63. That has been an exam question in the past too. It's an odd kind of number, but that's the maximum number of connections that you can have. The A standard of FireWire has a data transfer rate of up to 400 megabits per second. And the B standard transfers it up to 800. So it's important to remember those things. FireWire is a little like USB, except it is under standard 1394. It's platform independent. It has an A and a B standard. And the B connects it up to 800 and the A at up to 400 Mbps. Okay, Ethernet printers can be shared over a network, as I said earlier. Connecting a printer to the network requires cabling that is compatible with both the existing network and the network port installed in the printer. Most network printers use a what sort of port, people?
RJ45.
Yep. Okay, the last connection is wireless, and there are various types of wireless connections, as we discovered last week. Now, it's available in infrared, Bluetooth, and Wi-Fi, wireless fidelity technology. Right, what do we know about infrared?
Line of sight, small distance.
Yeah, exactly. And what about Bluetooth?
short distance, but not necessarily line of sight. And actually, the distances are quite a lot further. It's sort of up to 4 to 6 meters instead of only sort of a foot or so.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's a third standard that you can connect to a printer, and that's using Wi-Fi. Now, there are various standards using Wi-Fi, but they all fall under 802.11. All the Wi-Fi standards fall under 802.11, and we'll discuss a bit more about those in the next chapter. Now, there are quite a few here, and it doesn't go into much detail. All it says is B has a speed of 11 Mbps, G has a speed of 54 Mbps, and it's backwards compatible with B, and N has a speed of 150 Mbps, and it's backwards compatible with G and B. We'll use
side out. Then do the...
It'd be interesting to see how a printer works in duplex like that. Because you can do interesting things with a printer, like get it to print two pages on one sheet of paper, all those kind of things. So, yes, it would be interesting to see how you would do that. But you change all those things using the software configuration in the printer itself. And we'll get to talk about that in a little while. Any more questions about laser printers before we move on to impact printers? Okay, impact printers are dot matrix and daisy wheel. Who remembers those? Daisy wheel in particular.
Oh, I sure had do. One of those as well.
We're back now.
Remember seeing them.
Yeah, the good old daisy wheel had actually really quite nice type. It was almost like using a typewriter in terms of what it could produce. We used to use them back in the late 80s when I was working in a typing pool. Now, in the daisy wheel printer, the wheel contains the letters, numbers, and special characters. The wheel is rotated until the required character is in place, and electromechanical hammer pushes the character into the ink ribbon, which is why it makes such a hell of a clatter. It sounds like a very fast typewriter, a daisy wheel printer, for that reason, because it's using little hammers in the same way a typewriter does. The character then strikes the paper, imprinting the character on the paper. So it's got a rotating wheel with little hammers in it. That's how the daisy wheel works. In the case of a dot matrix printer, except that instead of a wheel containing the characters, a printer head contains pins that are surrounded by electromagnets. When energized, the pins push forward onto the ink ribbon, creating a character on the paper. The number of characters on a print head, 9 or 24, indicates the quality of the print. You could have 9 or 24 pin dot matrix if you remember. And the highest quality of the print is produced by the dot matrix printer, is referred to as near letter quality NLR. So that grouching noise you hear that when a dot matrix is going, it's all those little pins reacting, as opposed to the clack, clack, clack that a daisy wheel makes, a bit like a typewriter. Now, most dot matrix printers use continuous feed paper. Yep.
I was just going to say, I think in order to get the near letter quality, what it basically does is it does a pass, let's say, left to right, and then a pass back right to left, so that it actually ends up putting in, say, instead of 24 dots, it puts in 48.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. From memory, that's what mine used to do. Way back when I was using it in the typing pool, I used to have to use near letter quality because that was the best quality I could get out of the poor little thing. And it was, of course, much slower. So the pass was slower than with draft. And secondly, yes, it did pass over twice. You're probably right about that, Kate. Okay, continuous feed paper, I'm sure we've all seen it. It's got perforations on the sides of each sheet. And it's got perforated strips on the side that are used to feed the paper and to prevent skewing or shifting. You can get sheet feeders that print one page at a time for some of the higher quality office printers. There's also a large roller called the platen, or platen, applies pressure to keep the paper from slipping. If a multiple copy paper is used, the platen can be adjusted to the thickness of the paper. Okay, there are some advantages that an impact printer has. The consumables are inexpensive, very cheap in fact, including the paper. Uses continuous feed paper. I'm not quite sure why that's an advantage, but apparently it is. I suppose it's more efficient in some ways when you're doing certain things, although continuous feed isn't appropriate for every situation. And it has carbon copy printing ability. But there are some clear disadvantages of impact printers. What can anyone think of what they might be?
Well, the two that come immediately to my mind is the quality of the print and the speed.
Yep, they're low resolution and they have limited graphics capabilities. Very, very slow. To give you an idea, I have said that printer speed is usually measured in pages per minute. But not with impact printers. They are measured in characters per second. So that gives you an idea of how much slower impact printers are than other printer types. They're also bloody loud. I've never met a quiet daisy wheel or dot matrix printer in my life. So that's another disadvantage. They're rowdy, they're slow, and the resolution is very low compared with our printers. Any questions on impact printers before we move on to inkjet? Ah, the familiar old inkjet printer. And here we're at 7.1.5. They're easy to use, relatively inexpensive to buy, and the print quality of an inkjet printer is pretty good. It's measured in dots per inch. Of course, the higher the DPI, the greater the image detail. Now, inkjet printers use ink-filled cartridges that spray ink onto a page through tiny holes called nozzles, and they do that in a pattern. There are two types of inkjet nozzle. The first one is thermal, and with a thermal nozzle, a pulse of electrical current is applied to heating chambers around the nozzles. The heat creates a bubble of steam in the chamber. The steam forces ink out through the nozzle and onto the paper, and I'm picking that the Canon bubble jet series of printers actually used that sort of technology. It seems fairly obvious to me. The other sort that you will find is piezoelectric. And with that, piezoelectric crystals are located in the ink reservoir at the back of each nozzle. A charge is applied to the crystal, causing it to vibrate. This vibration of the crystal controls the flow of ink onto the paper. Now, you can use good economical plain paper in an inkjet printer, but also high quality photograph paper. In fact, if you're going to print photos, you'll need an inkjet, as I said earlier. Just remember, when printing anything from an inkjet, though, that the ink will take 10 to 15 seconds to dry after printing has ceased, and that can be a bit of a pain in the bum sometimes when you're sitting there, you've printed something out and you're waiting for the damn thing to dry so you can touch it. Now, the advantages of an inkjet printer. They're low cost, yet they are. They're pretty inexpensive. High resolution, yes, very much so. Again, as I said, they're the best low-cost printers for printing photographs. They're quick to warm up, but there are some disadvantages. The nozzles are prone to clogging, and they can be really messy sometimes. The ink cartridges are expensive. Yes, sometimes you can pay almost as much for a set of ink cartridges as you did for the printer, which seems stupid for me, but that seems to be the way it is. And the ink is wet after printing. There's a diagram, it's figure 2 in 7.1.5, that has inkjet printer parts. Okay, is there anything we don't understand about inkjet printers? Hello, who was that? I'm not getting any audio from
What's
you.
Up?
I can hear someone micing up, but there's no audio.
Okay, it is Terry Jarvis.
Anyway, we'll move on. If you want to use the chat, then we can interpret for you, Terry. That might be something that you could do in the interim.
I'm sitting in the chat window, so I can watch for anything if he wants to type anything in.
Anyway, inkjet printers are pretty common things. They've been around for a while, and they, of course, are improving, as are all the printers. But this next printer that we're going to discuss is the one that intrigues me the most, because it's not particularly common, although I really wouldn't mind owning one, having done a bit of research on them. And that is the solid ink printer 7.1.6. Now, solid ink printers use solid sticks of ink rather than toner or ink cartridges, and apparently they look a bit like crayons. Terry asked if there was a quality difference in the nozzles on an inkjet. Yes, there probably are, and I suspect that the two modes of operation, thermal or piezoelectric, have a difference in quality. I know that there were a lot of complaints about the Canon bubble jets, for instance, and I suspect that part of that may have been around the thermal, although I've got no evidence, direct evidence to prove that. But yeah, I suspect that nozzle quality is a factor.
I also found that the one that I'm using now is much better than the bubble jet that I used to have, and I'm using an Epson now.
Yes, it would be interesting to see what the advantages and disadvantages of the different types of inkjet operation are. We don't actually go into that, unfortunately, but it would be quite interesting to look at that. Okay, the solid ink printers. They use ink like an inkjet does, but unlike the inkjet, they use solid sticks of ink, which are, as I said, they look like crayons, apparently, and they produce high-quality images with vivid colours. The ink sticks are non-toxic and can be handled safely. Solid ink printers melt ink sticks and spray the ink through nozzles. The ink is sprayed onto a drum. The drum transfers the ink to the paper. Unlike inkjet and laser printing, these printers use most of their ink in the printing process, so there is very little waste and nothing at all to recycle, as with the used toner from laser printers. This technology was invented by Fuji Xerox in the 1990s, but unfortunately it hasn't taken off because it is very expensive. For instance, I saw an all-in-one solid ink from Fuji Xerox, which is called the Phaser, I think, and it was about 4,000 New Zealand dollars. Now, you can buy a professional office type of all-in-one inkjet or laser for under 1,000 here, so this gives you an idea of just how much more expensive the solid ink technology is.
Makes my $79 for mine look pretty ordinary then, doesn't it?
It does, and it's a pity because it seems to be far less wasteful and far better quality in terms of its results than other printers. And the advantages they give here are it produces vibrant colour prints, it's easy to use, apparently really easy to use from what I can read. It's You just load these sticks or these cubes into the printer, as many colour, you know, in various colours all at once, and away you go. There are fewer moving parts than other printers.
Yeah.
Can I really get you to back off your audio a bit, please? Because you're coming through our headphones, blasting us out here, and it takes an ages for me to normalise you down in the post-production. Sorry, Kate. It's just I've been meaning to get you to do it for a week or two now, if that's all right.
The next thing I've put in here is non-messy. Because you're handling sticks of crayon-like material, and they're non-toxic, you're not going to have any problem with extra mess like toner or ink getting all over the place. So that's another advantage that Cisco doesn't put in there. Another one is that they can use many different paper types, including recycled paper. You can't do that with other printers. You have to be a bit careful what paper you use, but in a solid ink you can use just about anything. And there's almost no waste. Of course, the big disadvantages with solid ink printers is that they are really expensive, as I said. It says here the ink is expensive. Actually, it's not now. Looking at the consumables, they're relatively, in terms of the consumables compared to the actual unit itself, are extremely inexpensive, unlike your home use laser or inkjet models, which seem to require you to pay as much for consumables just about as you paid for the printer. The other disadvantage in a solid ink is that they are slow to warm up. Okay, is everyone clear
on
solid ink
printers?
Yes, we can hear you now, Terry.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Kate.
Okay, any questions about solid ink printers before we move on to other printer types? Okay, it's all pretty straightforward. Okay, now there are two other printer types that you may work with or technologies, and they are thermal and dye sublimation. Now, who remembers the old fax machines or cash registers that have that funny waxy paper?
We used to have one of the fax machines.
Well, that's thermal paper. It uses chemically treated paper that has a sort of waxy surface. And it comes in a roll and is expensive, and it doesn't produce very good images at all. Ever tried scanning with the thing, for instance? Scanning a fax into your computer? It becomes black when heated. It has a short shelf life and must be stored at room temperature. Otherwise, in other words, it's a pain in the ass. Okay, most thermal printer print heads are the width of the paper. Areas of the print head are heated as required to make the pattern on the paper. It does have they do have a long shelf life though, however, due to a few moving parts. So that's the only real advantage of a thermal paper. It's not standard paper, it's hard to store, and it's expensive to buy. So that's why they're not much in use anymore. The other printer technology is called dye sublimation. Dye sublimation printers produce photo quality images for graphic printing. This type of printer uses solid sheets of ink that change directly from solid to gas in a process called sublimating. The print head passes over a sheet of cyan, magenta, yellow, and a clear overcoat, CMYO. There is a pass for each colour. Dye sublimation printers have the following advantages. The printers produce high quality images, and I think you will still find them in use in professional photography labs. Although inkjet is actually becoming more common for photographers' use now, but dye sublimation is still the one to get. The overcoat layer reduces smearing and increases moisture resistance. But the disadvantages are that the media can be very expensive. The printers are better for colour than grayscale, black and white. And as I said, you'll find them in professional photography. All right, that is the end of section 7.1. Any questions before we move on to installing and configuring your printer?
They didn't talk about printers that make dots.
No, because essentially they're not printers. They don't produce print. Although, what category would you put those under if you were talking about that kind of printer, Kate? What kind of printer is it in terms of the types we've just discussed?
It's an impact printer.
Is it not a dot matrix?
It sure as hell is. Oh no, yeah, it's an impact printer. It sure as hell is. It makes enough noise to be a bloody impact printer, that's for sure. Yeah.
Mine still uses tractor feed, so that makes it two reasons why it's an impact printer.
Yes, so does mine, Kate. Yeah, and I don't have any acoustic cabineting around mine, so it's very, very noisy.
Yeah, mine's called walk out of the room and shut the door.
Can't do that in this house, it isn't big enough, never mind. Anyway, once you've discovered what printer you want and all the various whys and wherefores, you need to install and configure it. Now, when you buy your printer, you get everything you need on an accompanying CD. The drivers, the manuals, software tools and all that good stuff. And you can look on the website of the manufacturer for more stuff. Now, this section covers everything from setting up your printer to ensuring it's performing optimally. I'm really tongue-tied today. Must be the cold. Blame that. Okay, how to set up a printer. There are differences, but in general, you need to do the following to set up a printer. Unpack it from its box and place it where it'll be used. Connect it to the computer, network, or printer server and plug it into an electrical outlet. As I said before, you need to be guided by the manufacturer about connection. These days, you will find that the manufacturer will ask you to connect it to the power only at first and connect it up to the interface with the computer later on, and I've told you the reason for that, and that's because you want to use the manufacturer's drivers always rather than the Windows generic drivers, because the manufacturer will have written the driver specifically for your model of printer, and so not only will it perform better, but you'll have far more options in terms of the settings and configuration. Okay, you've plugged it into the wall. You have to remove the packing materials such as the plastic inserts and the tape and from the toner or the ink cartridges. Install the toner or ink cartridges in the printer. Insert the paper, labels or envelopes into the paper trays and attach the paper tray to the printer. Now, there's a diagram for this section and you'll find there's a vital instruction missing, as I've said. Be guided by the manual about printer connections. I cannot emphasize that enough. Otherwise, it's goodbye system. All right. Once you've got your printer up and running physically on your desk, connect the power cable first, then connect the data cables, either USB or Ethernet, when prompted by the manual. Don't plug your printer into a UPS, you'll damage the UPS. Okay, now that you've got your printer set up, you need to install the device drivers and the firmware and the RAM. Can anyone remind me, what a driver is?
Software that communicates to the operating system and the device.
Yep, it is. And where does it live?
On the computer under the...
Yeah, okay.
It's on the computer and you can find the drivers under the management tab, driver management tab.
Not quite. It begins with D.
Device manager.
I knew what I meant.
Hey, you got it. Yeah, you got it. Under Device Manager. Okay. Now, drivers for printers also provide an interface for the user to configure the printer options. Yep. Every printer model has a unique driver, and they're frequently updated by the manufacturers to increase the performance of the printer and to add options or to fix problems. And you can download new printer drivers from the manufacturer's website. Okay. First, you need to find out if a new driver is available. So, you need to locate the drivers for your printer, and as you said, they are found under the Device Manager. You have to know the name of the current driver. Then, go to the manufacturer's website. Most of these websites have a link from the main page to a page that offers drivers and support. Actually, it's never that easy in my experience. There's quite a bit of finding to do and lots of search boxes to fill out before you get to the right driver. But you have to make sure the driver is compatible with the computer that you are updating. And what that means is what it's compatible with the
operating system.
Yep, right on, operating system. Okay. Okay, once you've done that, you go and grab the driver and put them on your hard drive. They come mostly in a zipped folder, so you have to uncompress them and save them in a safe place for your use. Hello? Who's mic'd up, please?
It's Kim's hotkey, that's all right. She's set it to the right control. Sorry, I might tell her to pick another hotkey one time.
That would be good. Okay, once you've downloaded your drivers and you've got them where you know they are, and you've got the instructions in a nice safe place, you need to install the downloaded driver. And that can happen automatically or manually. Mostly, you'll find that there's a setup file that automatically searches the system for older drivers and replaces them with a new one. But if there's no setup file, you just follow the directions that are supplied by the manufacturer. RTFM, folks. Read the fine manual. Once you've successfully installed your new driver package, you can test the new printer driver. And you do that by running multiple tests to make sure the printer works properly. Use a variety of applications to print different types of documents. Change and test each printer option. All right, firmware. Now, can anyone tell me what the difference between driver and firmware is?
The firmware is actually on the device itself, so it's software actually in the printer rather than software that's on your computer.
Exactly. And the instructions for downloading and updating firmware are similar to those for downloading and updating your drivers. Now, the big gotcha is that with firmware you need to make sure that everything stays connected while that's happening. And I tend to take the view, and so did my instructors last year, that don't be going to update firmware unless you really, really have to. If it ain't broke, if it works for you, don't fix it. It's just easier that way. Okay, before we go on to adding printer memory, have we got any queries?
Only one. When you said about following, it's crucial to follow the manufacturer's recommendations at setup, because you could possibly, I don't remember the verbiage you used, but ruin your system. Do you mean virtually ruin your computer?
Yep, you could need a rebuild if you get things wrong. So what you need to do is make sure that the proper driver for your printers are installed, so that when you plug your USB in, Windows doesn't try to install a driver because there's one already there. So the manufacturer will always tell you when is the right time to plug in your computer interface, and always do follow their recommendation.
Are you there, Kyle?
Okay.
Oh, sorry, John.
Yes, Terry.
A lot of times when I have done it that way, I still get that Windows found new hardware. Is that meant to happen or what?
No, usually the manufacturer will tell you to plug the power or turn the power on first and do a number of things, and it will tell you exactly when to plug in the interface during the install process. And it will tell you over and over again, the manual or the documentation on the website not to install it before this point. So what you need to do is install it exactly when the manual says to do it, and not before or after.
But I know what Terry means. Occasionally, that's why it is vitally important to usually, in most cases, put the driver on first, and as Kylie said, it will tell you that in the manual. And usually in the quick start guide, actually, so it's easy to get at, because I know that people want to go getting their computer plugged in and switched on before actually reading the fine manual, to use the cabbie vernacular. Found new software thing should only come up, well, often it comes up when you actually plug in the device, even though the driver's on, and it should only come up from the system tray, but I have seen, and if I get what Terry means, it comes up as a dialogue box. Yeah, it can be a bloody nuisance. I usually just tell it to keep looking for the driver off the CD, because it'll go and track it down, or else you can just click, you know, this time only sort of thing, and you sort of have to fight with it a bit. But the more modern Windows gets, the more modern printer you get, that's less likely to happen. This is basically basic Windows gatesing, as we used to say last year.
Yeah, well, you're right, that's what I get, and that's what I sort of do what you said, this time only, or find the best available off the CD.
Yeah, and you just have to hope and pray you don't get it, because Windows can be pretty flaky like that sometimes and insist on running it. But yeah, 50% of the time it's probably going to work out okay. You just have to hope that most of the time it's the 50%. But if it does crop up, tell it to go off and look for it on the CD, and it virtually will, and then it might just shut up for good then. Even though you've just gone through the installation program. Ah.
Thanks for that.
Okay, any more queries before we
talk You're welcome.
About printer memory? All right. Printer memory. And as with computers, the more memory there is, the better it performs. And printers always have some kind of RAM in them. And, of course, you can enable the printer to perform more complex jobs and be more efficient if you put more RAM in it. And it's very easy to do, really. You just turn the thing off, disconnect all the cables, open up the compartment, slot in the RAM, and close it up again and power it on. Then, of course, you need to test the printer. You can run a self-test, printer test page, or consult the manual for the type of speed and capacity of RAM that you need, because some printers take standard SODIMMs, and some will be proprietary. And if you can't find it on the manufacturer's website, you might even be reduced to opening the thing up and having a look to see what's in there. All right. 7.2.4, configuration options and default settings. Now, as I said, drivers can also be used to configure the printer's settings. And some common settings are paper type, and that can be standard or draft or gloss or photo. Print quality can be draft or normal or photo or automatic, or in the case of dot matrix printers, near letter quality. Color printing, and that can be multiple colors, used black and white print, black and white printing only, black ink used. Okay, so it depends on what you choose as to what ink will be used if you're using an inkjet, of course. It's pretty obvious. Grayscale printing, on the other hand, has the color images printed using only black ink in different shades, which is kind of, some people think that looks quite cool. It tends to be a designer thing. Of course, in paper size, you can have standard paper sizes or envelopes as business cards. I was talking about grayscale, how it uses black ink to produce a kind of colour, and, you know, people think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it puts less on it. You can do grayscale, which is, you know, as many shades of grey as you can get. It's just like black and white, really. It's usually done by depositing less ink on the page, obviously, to get your grey.
And harder to read, too, if you wish to compare.
Yeah, look, it's best done for pictures, for photos. You wouldn't really do grayscale for text. A lot of people use it for draft, or a lot of people, if they're trying to do a newsletter less inexpensively, will, for example, get the colour done on the front and back pages, and the inside of the newsletter might be black and white or something.
I had a Canon bubble jet, and I could choose black, but it also had a printer wizard. And when I chose in the wizard, like if I'd said, you know, fast black printing, for whatever reason, it ticked the box for grayscale.
Bubble jets are weird anyway.
Yeah, well, it was probably not wanting to do black and white. It wanted to do grayscale. Yeah, because black and white's purely different. It's either black or white. And when the brightness gets below a certain level, or the gradient gets below a certain level, it will decide to print black, as opposed to printing white.
Okay, so besides your colours, you've got paper size, which is standard paper sizes, or like A4, A5, A3, and envelopes and business cards. Paper orientation, usually you can have landscape or portrait. Print layout, which is different to orientations, it's how your printing will appear on any page. It can be a normal, banner, booklet, or poster. And as we talked about before, Kate mentioned duplex, normal or two-sided printing. And you can read the manual for all the different options that are available in your printer. Okay. With printers, most optimization is completed through the software supplied with the drivers. In the software, there are tools available to optimize performance. The print small settings.
Shit.
Kim?
Oh, I really screwed.
Oh, I see.
Sorry, guys. Okay. I think I'll have to get her to use the accent key.
Okay. I thought you had something to say there, Kim.
No, I'm sorry. My hotkey was just messing up and I keep tapping it.
Okay, right. Some more settings about optimizing performance is the first one is the print spool settings. You can cancel or pause the current print jobs in the printer queue. You can also do that through the printing services, which we don't really cover in this chapter. That's more in the advanced. But you can go into services and also cancel the spooler there if the printer gets really stuck and you can't take the job out of the print queue, which sometimes happens. There's also colour calibration, and that means that the colour that appears on your monitor is the same that appears on your paper, and you need to make sure that those things match, and that's colour calibration. You've mic'd up again, Kim.
I'm out of here.
Everybody, don't use control as your hotkey, because it tends to get hooked by the the Windows keyboard interrupt bug when you use a screen reader. Yuck.
It does if you're doing other things, yes. Okay. Paper orientation. And again, that's landscape or portrait or image layout. And so those are the settings that you can have in your printer configurations that come with the software on your CD. So as you can see, you've got a lot more flexibility now. The Windows driver can do some of that, but one of the differences that you'll see, and you don't get to do that in this course, unfortunately, but there's a really cool assignment in the Discovery course right at the beginning that actually lets you play around with the configuration options in a Windows driver and in a manufacturer's driver to see what the differences are, and that's quite fun. Okay.
I have a question, Kylie.
Yeah, John first and then Kate.
I don't understand the difference in the layouts with the landscape and portrait. Are those literally landscape, as in scenes of landscapes and portraits?
Oh, okay.
Can I answer that?
I just configured that. Yes, Kate, go ahead.
The difference, John, is when something is done in portrait, if you've got an A4 piece of paper and you hold it so that the narrow part is at the top and it goes down long ways, as if you were going to read it, and the print's written on it in that direction, that's called portrait. But if you turned the paper 90 degrees, and so you've got the long side at the top and it's narrower from down, that's, and the print goes across the long side of the paper, that's called landscape. So it's how the print sits on the page, whether it uses the narrow as the top to bottom, or whether it uses the wide as top to bottom.
Thank you. So typically I just assumed, but I know what assuming does. The portrait is the standard way I expect it to be then. Thank you.
Yeah, just like a portrait, for instance, like a painting portrait. Whereas as a landscape painting, you would find that the canvas was turned up, was turned horizontally.
Sorry, Kylie, I've just got distracted. The question I was going to ask you was, or the comment I was going to make is, one of the other setups that my printer has is that you can actually have its ink monitor come up on the computer, and so I can actually use the computer and control the ink on the computer. That's one of the other facilities in the drivers that my printer has.
Do you mean the amount of ink you can use, Kate? What does it do exactly?
Oh, no, sorry. It lets me know when the ink is low, and then when I'm changing the ink, it can take me through an installation process for controlling the printer to insert the new cartridges.
Oh, very cool. Very cool indeed. Okay, now you've set up your printer and got it all configured properly, you need to test to make sure that it's running optimally. Now, there are several ways you can do this. First, you can print a test page manually, and in XP, of course, you find that under Start and under the Printers and Faxes menu. If you're going to do that in Windows Vista, you need to go into the Printers menu under the Start menu, and then the Printers and Faxes menu is under Printers. And you right-click the printer that you want to work on, and you go look in the under Properties, and in the General tab, there's a print test page button. And in Windows 7, it's something similar. If you don't want to use the search box, you can look under Start, Devices and Printers to display the Devices and Printers control panel. And in Windows 7, you can right-click the desired printer and again look in the Properties in the General tab, and you will find the Test button. So in XP, it's under Printers and Faxes, which is in the Start menu. In Vista, it's under Printers and then Printers and Faxes, and work on the printer properties. And in 7, it's under Printers, Devices and Printers. Okay, once you have printed your test page, a dialog box will open asking if the page printed correctly. And if the page didn't print correctly, there are built-in help files to assist you in troubleshooting the problem. Of course, doing that as a blind person is going to be a bit challenging, so it might help to have the handy pair of eyes around at this point. Another way that you can test a printer is to print from an application. Yes?
I usually tell it it did anyway.
Ah, right, of course. Now, to print from an application is really easy. You just open the thing up, write some text, and print it out and see how it comes out. And if it's wrong, you can fiddle around with it until you get it right. You can also print from the command line, and to do that, you open your command line, which we all know how to do now, don't we?
Run CMD.
That's it. And once you're in there, you just type print space, the name of the file, .txt. Now, a gotcha with a command line test is that you can only print ASCII files like .txt or .bat. So just be aware of that, but it's print space, file name, .txt, and away it should go. Another way you can test the printer is by printing it from the panel on the printer itself. Now, you'll usually find a button or something on the panel of the printer, but you need to consult the printer manual to check out how to print from the panel of the printer. So then you're using the firmware rather than the driver, and you're testing the printer that's completely separate from the computer, which is handy sometimes when you're troubleshooting. Okay, any questions before we talk about how to share out a printer? Okay, 7.2.7, share a printer. Sharing a printer means it can be used by multiple computers, even if they're not directly connected to it. Of course, this saves printing resources. In Windows XP, you go to the Printers and Faxes menu, and in Vista, you go to the Control Panel and into Printers. And in Windows 7, you go to Devices and Printers. In Windows XP and Windows Vista, once you're there, you right-click the printer and choose Properties, or press Alt-Enter if you're us. In Windows 7, you right-click the printer and choose Printer Properties. And in all Windows from there on, you select the Share tab. Click the Share This Printer radio button. Keep or change the share name, so the shared printer has to have a name that both computers are going to know. And usually, the printer itself will come up with a name. If you don't like that name, you can change it to something that you like better. And then click Apply or Alt-A. All the computers that use the used printer, the shared printer, must have the correct drivers installed. Drivers of other operating systems can be installed on the print server if you're using one. Now, to connect to the printer from another computer on the network in Windows XP, you choose Start, Printers and Faxes, and then Add Printer. In Windows Vista, you do that from the Control Panel, and then Printers, and then Add Printer. And in Windows 7, you go from the Devices and Printers menu and add a printer from there. The Add Printer wizard will guide you through the steps. Basically, it's about choosing to use a printer that's connected to a network rather than one that you're directly connected to. And theoretically, at least, you should be there. Personally, I'd find if you're using different operating systems, it's easier to have a network printer. Plug it into your router. They're much cheaper than they probably were even when this curriculum was first written. Okay.
I have a question, Kylie.
Yes, John.
Just because it didn't say as I was reading this chapter, but if I wanted to share a printer in our household, I'm using Windows 7. Our youngest daughter is using Vista, and my wife has a new Apple, whatever it's called. Could she also do the same thing? Share the same printer?
If you networked it from the router, but you would need to make sure that each person has the appropriate drivers for that printer. Sharing it the way I've just described would be difficult. Elise managed it successfully between XP Pro and XP Home, but I'm not
Hang on, what was that, Kylie?
We're talking about sharing printers, and John has a number of OSs in his house, including Apple Mac and a couple of flavors of Windows. So I'm suggesting that a network printer would probably be better than trying to share the printer the way I just described.
In my opinion, it would be, yes, because, look, you can do it. What happens is between Windows boxes, it'll reef the printer driver from the, let's say we had computer one that was a Windows professional machine and we shared it out. If you connected another Windows box of the like same operating system, i.e. Windows XP, to Windows XP, it will reef the driver across. If you did that between, say, Windows XP and, say, a Vista or 7 machine, I'm not sure what the results might be because the printer driver might be different, and even though it'll try and pull it across, it could blow up spectacularly. I've never tried it. Especially if you're sort of sharing out from a 32-bit system to a 64. So, yeah, I would agree with Kylie. If you can put it on the network with its own Ethernet address and then install the relevant drivers and tell them where to find the printer on each of the client machines, be they Mac, Windows 7, Windows Vista, 32, 64-bit, or Windows XP, you should be right to go. There shouldn't be any difference between the driver between the home version of Windows XP and the professional version of XP.
No, although you did have to take an extra step when you shared out the AAA PC, didn't you?
So when you go to purchase a printer and you want to share it, let's say there's four computers here, you would actually want to purchase a printer that is called a network printer.
Yes, and I would recommend that you choose one that plugs in via an Ethernet cable, not wirelessly. Wireless printers actually do work, and they are improving, but for reliability's sake, I would choose one that plugs in via a network cable.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, scanners, people. On to scanners. 7.3, if you're following your notes. Okay, scanners convert printed data or images into an electronic data format that a computer can store or process as required. After an image has been scanned, it can be saved, modified, and even emailed, Although most scanners performing the same operation, different types of scanners are available. You might be asked to select, i.e. purchase, install, main train and troubleshoot a scanner. Okay, let's look at resolution, type and interface. Like printers, a scanner's resolution is measured in DPI dots per inch. The higher the DPI, of course, the better the quality of the image on your computer screen, and the higher the likelihood of an accurate conversion into text with OCR, because, of course, if OCR doesn't get a good image to try and recognize, it's not going to do so well. When you scan something, you can save it as an image file, such as a JPG, a JPEG, a GIF, or TIFF, or BMP. When you want to convert it to text, you use optical to character recognition software, OCR, to convert to something you can read and edit in Word or Notepad. Now, to allow communication of data, the scanner and computer must have compatible interfaces, of course. How obvious is that? The interfaces and cables used for printers are typically the same as the interfaces and cables used for scanners, so they can be parallel, SCSI, USB, FireWire, network, whatever. Okay. All in one devices. Now, they usually contain, they can be really good. They're good space savers and they're nice and cheap. And they can scan,
good for
print,
both anchors,
copy and fax, yeah. And they're typically used in home office environments or where space is limited. They're often used with a computer.
I didn't find mine work. Sorry, Pat.
Can operate alone.
I didn't find mine worked as well.
No, they have some disadvantages, and we'll come to that. I wouldn't buy an all-in-one for a lot of reasons. And
I've learned my lesson. The scanner's great. The printer's a piece of junk.
Yeah, that's one disadvantage that Cisco actually doesn't mention here. The advantage, of course, is the installation and configuration. Because all the devices are built in, scanner, fax, printer, they're easy to configure because you've got one device. And upgrades are easier, and software, because the software is designed for all the devices at once. Connection setup is easier as well because you've only got one port. But they're not modular. So if one device breaks, as happened with Elise recently, the printer went west, all the devices may not be operational. And they're not designed for heavy use. So bear that in mind. They're inexpensive and they save a lot of space, but really, they're going to end up costing you more because they may not last as long, and if one part breaks down, you've probably lost it. All right, flatbed scanners, and we probably, most of us, are familiar with these. They work by moving a light array beneath glass onto which you place the material to be scanned. Some of them come with sheet feeders that can be used to scan multiple images. A sheet feeder is a device that can be attached to the flatbed scanner to hold multiple sheets and feed them into the scanner one at a time. This allows faster scanning, but the image quality is usually not as good as a flatbed scanner that doesn't use a sheet feeder. I'm not quite sure if that still applies these days. I think probably sheet feeders are getting better and better.
That one didn't make sense to me, because if it's still scanning one piece at a time, why should it reduce the quality?
I'm not entirely sure, John, unless they were trying to raise the efficiency of the process by scanning faster or not passing the light array as efficiently, which could have been the reason, but no, it doesn't make sense to me either. I know of blind people who do use sheet feeders in their scanners. There are some people, for instance, who buy books, get them ripped apart at a printing place, stick them in the sheet feeder, and away they go. Then OCR them all later on. That's how they use their books. There's actually a quite an old now podcast from someone on Blind Cool Tech who does just that. Okay, handheld scanners. And to me, they're a pain because I could never pull them straight. I just couldn't do it. These work similarly to the flatbed, but the units are physically dragged across the material to be scanned, a bit like an opticon. Who besides me used to use an opticon?
Oh dear, does that put us in the same age bracket?
No, I don't know. But anyway, I learned to use the thing at school, and trying to drag that bloody camera across a printed page straight was a bane of my life. I kept having to use the holder that came with it to help me. Anyway, and this is what these little handheld scanner camera things are like. Sometimes they need more than one pass, and then you have to reassemble the image when you're done, which is a pain. The last kind of scanner is a drum scanner, and John was asking about these earlier. Now, they produce a high quality transfer of an image, and they're usually found commercially in museums and the like. Because you want to...
Does that mean that they're old, they're found in museums?
Yeah, well, they are getting old, actually. They're being replaced by really higher quality flatbed scanners now. But you'll find them in places where you want to do high-end reproductions of paintings, or you want to conserve paintings, or historical photographs.
Mm. Now, I've never seen one, actually. It'd be great to play with one, wouldn't it? Because I'd go into the art gallery and... you know, get this big drum scanner and hold it up in front of some famous painting or something, take it to the Louvre in France and do it in front of the Mona Lisa and see how long it takes for security to come and get you.
Yeah, it's a good fantasy, that's for sure. Anyway, what you do is you attach the image to a revolving drum or load it into a supporting canister. And the drum is rotated at high speed across optical scanners. The optical scanners move slowly across the drum surface until the entire image is captured. The captured image is then reproduced by the computer as a digital image file. And I suspect one of the reasons why the drum scanner is so high quality is that you've got multiple scanners doing the job instead of one. So that will help in getting a really good reproduction. Right. So, now you've decided what scanner you like, or what one you're going to have, or what one your customer's going to have. You need to set it up in the same way as you do your printer. And as it says here, this process isn't dissimilar to printers. Like printers, scanners can connect to a computer using the USB, FireWire, network, or parallel port interface. And some scanners can connect using a SCSI interface as well, though you don't see that as often now. Scanners that are built into an all-in-one device are plugged directly into an AC wall outlet, while other types of scanners acquire power through USB or FireWire only. After unpacking the scanner, you connect the appropriate power cable and data cables, again RTFM. Use the scanner documentation as your guide, or check the manufacturer's website for instructions. As a tech, when you're setting up stuff, because you can't remember to do how every piece of equipment operates, you get to read lots of manuals and service documentation. Boring but necessary. Of course, once you've unpacked the thing and plugged it in, you need to install the drivers. Again, wait until you're told to connect the data cable, otherwise you're buying a whole heap of trouble. When you set up a scanner, install the driver software that the manufacturer includes with the scanner. And this driver is usually more current than the drivers on your computer. Of course it will be. It will also provide more functionality than the basic driver from Windows. So the best place, if you ever asked in an exam, to get a driver, to get the most current driver, is where, folks?
From the manufacturer's website, because that'll be the most recent one.
Exactly. Some scanners also got an automatic update feature. Just RTFM all the way through here. Read the fine manual. Now, scanners also have some configuration and default settings, just like printers do. And they differ between model type and manufacturers. You might get a basic graphics editing software package for editing photographs and other images, and that might include OCR software that, of course, scans images into text, and that software might be something like OmniPage or Abbey Fine Reader. Those are probably the two most common ones that come with any scanner you can buy from a store.
We're talking about OCR programs here?
Yes.
Oh, of course, Kurzweil is quite popular, or if you're a FS person, of course, Open Book. So there you go.
Yeah, I was talking about off-the-shelf things.
Ah,
I had a
yes, well,
little.
OmniPage is more or less off the shelf, isn't it?
I had a little tiny one, really, really, really basic, just called Text Cloner. That was pretty good.
Actually, I've heard it is pretty good. Some of those premier software things are quite low cost, and they're not bad at all, so, from what I've heard.
There's
Especially
only
if you
one.
can't afford your Kurzweils and things. Sorry, Kate. Yep.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I use OmniPage and everything that's as window generic as I can get it. The one thing that they didn't mention, which I've had happen with a couple of scanners that I've bought, is sometimes the scan head is actually locked, and you have to use a special either undo a screw or pull out a piece of metal or a piece of plastic or something to unlock your scan head, because if you try to scan with your scan head locked, goodbye scanner.
Yeah, you've got to flick the
Yes,
switch
true.
on the
They
bottom of the new one that I
Would you
undid
say
back
that
in
again, Kate?
November.
Kate was saying about the scanner lock, John, and that you
Yeah,
have to
she's right.
unlock your
Okay.
scanner and your printer, and that also applies to some printers as well. If you don't unlock the unlock thing before you try using it, ta-ta.
I read that, but I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah, it's not something that's mentioned in the notes, but it is mentioned in the instructions in the lab. And before the end of the session, I will talk about the lab because I'm not going to insist you do a lab for this chapter, although I would encourage you to do what I did last year, simply because for a tech you need to practice getting down manuals and quick start guides and documentation and being able to successfully interpret it. So it's good practice. But let's continue with the configuration options for a scanner. And you can configure colour as grayscale or black and white. You can have one touch scanning into your choice of software, and that's often popular things like Microsoft Word or PDF. You can play with the quality and resolution choices. And you can mess with sheet feeders, colour calibration between devices, and colour calibration so that the device, so the colours on your scanner and your monitor and your printer all look the same. And you need to mess around with the calibration until that happens. Now, it says here, to calibrate a scanner, you scan a graphic that contains specific colours. A calibration application installed on the computer compares the output of the scanner against the known colours of the sample graphic on the display. The software adjusts the colour of the scanner accordingly. When your scanner, monitor, and printer treat the same colours in the same way, the image you print matches the image you scan, and that's what you want. Okay, before we move on to talking about preventive maintenance techniques, have we got any queries? Okay. Printers and scanners have a lot of moving parts that can wear out over time or through extended use, and so they must be re maintained regularly in order to operate correctly. You want to avoid downtime and loss of productivity and high repair costs, so you really need to look after your printers and scanners in more in many ways than you do a computer because of the moving parts involved. Okay, printer maintenance. Basically, RTFM again, consult the manufacturer's site for a maintenance schedule for the printer to find out how often you should do your maintenance. They need a higher level of maintenance because of impurities from the printing process staying on the printer and may damage the machine over time. Be sure to unplug the printer from the electrical source before beginning any type of maintenance. That pretty much goes without saying. It seems to apply to every appliance we've ever talked about in this course and is no different here. Unplug your appliance before you play with it. Okay. Most printers come with printer
Just won't
monitoring
tell them
and
about the
diagnostic
keyboard on
software.
the Eep. Sorry, Carly.
I don't think she heard you.
So, yes, we should unplug everything before we start fiddling. We won't just tell them some of the stunts we've pulled in the old days, which we told you all last week in Chapter 6 anyway.
Yeah, we did. It seems to apply to everything. Now, it says here, most printers come with printer monitoring and diagnostic software from the manufacturer that can help you maintain the printer. Follow the guidelines and for the following components: the printer roller, the surfaces, the printer and scanner, paper handling mechanisms. The type and quality of paper and ink used can affect the life of the printer. So what that means is not only do you need to select good quality consumables when you're using these devices, but you need to select those recommended by the manufacturer. And the reason for that is not only because of warranty conditions, it's also because that will extend the life of your device. If you're using something that's recommended by the manufacturer, you're going to get much more out of your device. That includes paper and ink. Also, don't try to refill your ink cartridges unless you want to avoid your warranty and or create a big mess and or damage your machine. Make sure your transparencies and other papers are printed on the right side, and load the paper according to the manufacturer's instructions. And the same goes for ink selection. If you don't use the right type of ink, the printer might not work, or the print quality might drop. In fact, it will probably. So again, follow the manufacturer's instructions. Okay, maintaining a scanner. You need to keep scanner surfaces clean. If the glass becomes dirty, read the manufacturer's manual for cleaning instructions. To prevent liquid from leaking into the scanner case, do not spray glass cleaner directly on the device. Again, that's a universal rule for anything that you clean. Don't spray on the device, spray on the cloth that you're using. And of course, that applies here to the scanners. Now, it may be that you need to remove the scanner's glass to clean inside as well as outside. And so you'll need to follow the manufacturer's instructions in order to do that, and make sure you replace the glass in the same way up it was before you removed it. When the scanner isn't in use, keep the lid closed. That prevents dust and other things getting into it. That's just common sense, really. Put handheld scanners in a safe place, and also never lay anything heavy on a scanner because you could damage the casing or the internal parts. That's all pretty straightforward, isn't it? Any questions before we move on to the troubleshooting section? Cool, troubleshooting, very important. Okay, with printer and scanner problems, a technician must be able to determine if the problem exists with the device, the cable connection, or the computer that it is attached to. See, our troubleshooting is getting more complex as we move on here. Right, let's review the troubleshooting process. What do you do when you are identifying the problem in any device, including scanners and printers?
Firstly, identify the problem.
Yeah, what do you have to do to help you do that?
You would probably need to look at, with a printer, you'd need to look at the quality of the print that's coming from it. With a scanner, you'd need to look at the quality of the image that it's producing.
Yeah, okay. Before you sit down at the computer, you had to do something which may be kind of difficult.
Check the cables.
Yeah, we're moving ahead here. We want to identify the problem first. So we need to do something that could be quite painful in some aspect, in some ways. We need to talk to people.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could ask the customer what they found was wrong with it.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Sorry, there were two of you there.
Tell them to plug it in.
I said, it didn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
You might just get that right out of your customer. It didn't work.
Talk to the customer. Ask two types of questions.
Open-ended, closed-ended.
Yeah, and there are some examples in your notes of open-ended and closed-ended questions to ask relating to printers. Okay,
is
number
it
two.
Under warranty.
Yeah, that's a really important one, because if I found there was a printer under warranty and it was a laser and I wasn't certified, what am I going to do?
You tell them to send it back to the manufacturer.
Yep. I wouldn't be bothering to touch it if that was no way. Because anything I do might void the warranty conditions. Okay, establish a theory of probable causes. And
yeah, like it's unplugged.
Okay, what else might be wrong with a printer?
Might be out of ink.
Might be out of ink.
Might be out of paper.
Yeah, something else with the paper too, which is really, really common. You'd have no idea how common this is.
There might be paper stuck in it.
Yeah, exactly. Paper's always becoming jammed, and it's amazing how panicky people get when their paper jams in their damn printer. Honestly.
I have no idea why the paper would jam when you forget to put the front of the printer down before you start printing. Why would that happen?
Yeah, just no idea at all, hey? How about that? Wouldn't have a clue. You want to hear a funny story?
Well, yep, go for it.
I had this person once, and she was bitching. Oh, you know, I get this splayed image and get this, this is when I was on the help desk at Premier and Cabinet, actually. Anyway, work's all coming out all stretched and splayed out the end of the paper, and she was really upset going along crook. So anyway, we ended up sending one of the technicians down to have a look at it and make it print while she was in front of it, the printer and stuff, because the network printer was just around the corner from her desk. Oh, it was coming out splayed out and stretched. Right? This silly bitch had been grabbing the page and pulling it out of the printer as it was half out to hurry it along.
That'll do it.
Yep, so there you go. They are mechanical devices. They are mechanical devices that need to be looked after, and you don't go pulling the paper out expecting it to work properly if you're hurrying up for your print job. If the Premier has a briefing note, you make him wait.
Yeah, well, if you can't make a Premier wait, who can you make wait?
Oh, dearie, dearie
me. We have
to
do it.
You have to wonder about some people, don't you? You really do.
Oh, I ain't going to print any quicker whether you're just a sort of somebody down in the staff canteen or whether you're the Premier of the state. It won't matter. It's going to print the same speed for you.
Exactly. Of course, there's other things you could do is look on the display screen of the device to see if there are any errors or out-of-paper warnings or paper jam or anything like that, or look on the computer screen to see if there are any errors there. Okay, what could you do to solve some of these problems?
You could put in some more ink, put in some more paper, and plug it in and turn it on.
You could also check with subordinates on your team and check with some news groups, things like that.
Yeah, sometimes simple things like even resetting the paper in the tray can help, especially if it's a humid day and the pages are sticking together. That sometimes just helps if you take the paper out of the tray, wiggle it a bit. There's a little bit of a technique that I used to know, and it's hard to describe how to do. But it's bending the paper a little bit, and that just separates the pages again. You can do that, and if that doesn't work, then you need to change the paper. But sometimes it can be as simple as that.
Yeah, and you can fan the paper too before putting it back in too. One of the problems with my Trouble Jet Cannon thing I've got here, which is hopeless, is that the paper guides are pretty crappy. They're just rubbish. So they don't even support the paper properly anyway. So it's a little wonder you're getting out of paper messages or paper jam messages it thinks the paper's not sitting right because the paper, some of these flimsy, plasticky, bubble jet type printers these days really don't even hold the paper correctly to begin with.
Now, you would have really had trouble with this lady had she had to wait 15 seconds before she could touch that printed piece of paper.
Oh, she probably would have rung us up and said, oh, it gets all smeary and what's all this ink doing on my hands? Well, you're touching it first, you silly Burke. So, no, well, we ended up having to put her straight. But, yeah, some people are just impatient. And then they spend more time crying because they've had to reprint the work that they could have just waited for.
Okay.
Not to mention all of those poor trees that she killed.
Exactly, what a waste.
Yes, let's hear it for the tree huggers. That's it. Why are we sitting here in this paperless, that's the way Jackie and I started this lecture off last year. We did a thing on being vision impaired. Why do we want to know about, putting copious amounts of carcinogenic chemicals on pieces of bleached rainforest? Well, that's because sighted people love it.
True
they
enough.
They sure do. Yeah, okay. Now, once you've sorted out whatever the customer's problem is, what are some of the ways that you can test the printer to make sure it's running okay again?
You can go to various applications and produce various styles of documents that you can print out.
Do a test page.
A test page from where, Terry?
From the printer's property menu, or the printer's menu.
Yeah, and also from where?
And you can also do one directly from the printer.
Yes, yep. So there are all those options that you, and it's best to do all of them. Also here it says reprint the customer's problem document. Why would you do that?
To ensure that you've actually solved the problem and that the problem was actually with the printer and not with the document itself.
So they also have proof in their hand.
Exactly, John. That's what I was going to say. To show the customer that this is the best way with a printer problem, to show the customer the problem being solved, here's your nice printer document that you were after in the first place. And of course, documenting your findings, what are you going to do with that just as a last thing here?
Write down what you did, the steps you used, the equipment you used, the components that you replaced, and your charge.
Of course.
Kate never forgets her charge.
Good for
I'm
Kate.
Unemployed. I need the money.
I'm self-employed and need the money.
Don't we all? Okay, here are some common problems and solutions. Okay, the first one, and it's good to go over these, even if we don't go over all of them today, because they tend to give you scenarios and exams and tests, and some of them are taken directly from these notes, but some of them are taken from, some of the solutions are taken in a similar context, so it's best to read these and actually familiarise yourself with them. Okay, an application document does not print. The probable causes. what can the possible causes be? An application won't print.
You haven't set up the printer properly in the application?
Possibly. What else?
You own my Canon desk yet?
Oh, yeah, could do.
If you're unfortunate, yeah.
Could
you
be a
might
driver issue.
Be out of ink.
No, driver issues, an you wouldn't expect an application not to print at all, John. You might get unusual characters and things. But usually there's a problem with a print. The first thing you do, apart from looking at the physical things, like out of ink, out of paper, jams, that kind of stuff, is look in the print queue. In case things have got jammed up. And often they do, so you just cancel the job in the print queue and redo it, and it's usually fine. And if that doesn't work, you'd have to go into services and do it from there, which is possibly a bit more tricky. Right, here's another problem. The printer cannot be added, or there is a print spooler error.
I don't think I quite understand the question.
I think a print spooler error would be that there's too many documents and you need to go to the spooling and get rid of the documents that are in the queue so that you can try and start again.
Yes, what they're actually getting at here is what I mentioned before, is that you'd have to go into the services rather than just the print queue to fix this one. the print, what you'd need to do is start the prints, is stop the print spool, or restart it, and then reboot the computer. So that's what you'd need to do with that one. And that's done in services rather than anything to do with the printer. Okay, it says here, printer jobs are not sent, are sent to the print queue, but are not printed. Now, what might happen there? This isn't anything to do with a jammed queue anymore. What could be another reason that the printer is in, the job is in the queue, all ready to go, but it's not happening? What could be the problem?
The printer's offline?
Possibly. What else?
It's being sent to the wrong default printer?
Yes, or the wrong default something else. What does a printer use to connect to a computer?
The wrong port.
Exactly. Okay. So, where would you go, do you think, to check that the port is correct?
In Windows 7, you go to the Device Manager and check what port your printer is on in there.
Yeah, you can get through there, or with any flavour of Windows, it's the properties of that printer. So you'd use whatever menus you'd need to in any flavour of Windows and go into the printer's properties, and there's a ports tab, and you just need to check that it's connected to the correct port. Okay, the print queue is functioning properly, but the printer does not print. And this is a really, really simple, and it's something that's often often missed. Something Kim mentioned a little earlier.
Cables
are making sure that the cables are plugged in.
Yeah, Terry and Kate both thinking on the same lines there. Yep, that's exactly what it says here. Check for bent pins on the printer cable and check the print cable connection to the printer and computer. Okay, we've got 7 minutes to go. I think we've got time to do a little bit more. Okay. The printer is printing unknown characters or does not print a test page. Now, what do you think would cause that?
Would that be a driver error or problem?
It would. Yep, that's your key, John. If you see in a test unknown characters, you will find it's probably a driver problem, and it says here, uninstall the current print driver and install the correct print driver. Okay, the next one is also unknown characters. The printer's printing unknown characters or it does not print anything, and that's the difference. And there might be several causes for this. The first one is quite interesting.
Was, I think, it possibly out of ink?
Yeah, possibly.
I would have thought that could be a driver error as well.
The nozzle is congested or blocked?
The cables are not connected properly?
Yes, and there's one that hasn't that is mentioned that you need to also consider, that it may be plugged into a UPS. So you need to make sure your laser printer in particular is not plugged into a UPS socket.
Is it primarily laser printers that you cannot plug in to a UPS? Even though I know I'll find that in my fine manual.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Hey, Kylie. I know I wasn't here at the start, so I might have missed something, but what does it do, or why is it so bad for the printer to be plugged into the UPS?
You could damage the UPS if that happens.
Because we're talking about a laser printer here, gang, which sometimes is a little bit, you know, you think they're just talking about any old printer, but talking about a laser printer. And a laser printer, when you switch them on, draw such a burst of power so quickly, it can damage the UPS, or make it at least jolt and, you know, sort of drop its output voltage at the very least, which could, you know, have a detrimental effect on the computers you've also got plugged in it. So it's because of the high power surge that occurs when you first turn on a laser printer. It's for the same reason you wouldn't want to plug it, you know, a heater or an air conditioner into one.
Okay, E, we got time to run the quiz. We have about 5 minutes to go.
Oh, we can do the quiz. Hang on, I'll just alt tab to it.
I'll let you read and I'll do the credits this time. How about that?
Sounds good to me. Let's have a look. Should have been reading it during the lesson. Okay, gang, can you hear me all right?
No yep. Trouble.
Chat windows open, please, people.
Chat windows open, please, and Kylie can do the credits. Here we go. Okay, question one. Which technology is used by dot matrix printers? A, digital drop. B, electrostatic spray. C, electrophotographic. D, ink melting. And E, impact. Go now.
And all those who answered, yep. All those who answered E were correct.
Which impact. Was impact. Okay, which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image? Here we go. A, cleaning. B, conditioning. C, developing. D, fusing. E, transferring. F, writing. Go now.
I beg my pardon, Elise. My computer just had a big muck up. Yep, would you please mind yep. reading the question?
Not a problem. Which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to that latent image? Now, I hope Kylie went through this in the bits of the lesson I wasn't able to listen to. I assume
I
you
did.
Went through all that
yes,
bit.
Yes, I yeah, made sure.
Good. Okay,
did,
which,
yep.
okay, so I'll read the question again. Which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image? A, cleaning. B, conditioning. D, develop. Sorry, C, I'll try again. A, cleaning. B, conditioning. C, developing. D, fusing. E, transferring. F, writing. Now remember, it's the latent image, not the one that's produced on the paper, but the one that's actually on the roller.
Actually, no. I think I emphasised this. Remember I said which phase is where the toner comes in, and it's C, developing.
Developing, yep, because it's a latent image that you actually don't see on the roller, and that's when we put the toner, so we develop. Okay. What are three disadvantages of impact printers? Do we want to do this as a yes-no thing, Kylie, or how do you want to run this one?
Yeah, I think, yeah, yes-no would be easier, I think.
Okay, so we're looking for disadvantages, so type A, we're looking for disadvantages. Here we go. What are three disadvantages of impact printers? Here we go. One, A, expensive consumables.
Those who answered N were correct.
Okay, high power consumption.
And again, you are all correct.
Okay, color capability.
Yep, that's correct. It has limited color capability.
Yep, so all the yes people were correct there. The next option is noisy printing.
Very good, definitely.
They're all good. Color printing, noisy printing. Slow printing. Yep.
And again, you're correct.
Unable to use continuous feed paper. Well, these guys have learnt their lesson today, haven't they? Aren't you all good?
Well, they
next
have
question.
Indeed. Yep.
Question four. Which type of printer melts ink and sprays it on through a nozzle onto a drum to transfer and image onto a page, onto paper? A, fusion ink. It's an interesting question here. B, impact. C, inkjet. D, laser. E, solid ink. And F, thermal.
Okay, the one person who answered E was correct. It is solid ink. And the clue in that question was melts ink. The only technology which melts ink is the solid ink one.
There you
doesn't
go.
Matter
yes,
how it's
a lot
sprayed
of people
or what
think he's spraying,
it
yeah.
melts ink.
Melting ink. Yep, that's, there you go.
Yep.
Which type of printing process uses solid sheets of ink that change directly to gas when the print head is heated up? Okay, here we go. Okay, A, dye sublimation. B, impact. C, impact. C, inkjet. D, laser. E, solid ink. And F, thermal. Go now. Yep. Dye sublimation, turning from directly to a solid to a gas.
Yep, that's correct.
So that was A for people out there in listening land. Everyone got it. Excellent. Which peripheral is used to convert paper document into electronic files? A, digital reader. B, printer. C, projector. D, scanner. Go now.
Well, that was easy, wasn't it? Yes, I'll be very
Yes, we all came out of the womb knowing that one, didn't we? Okay, now the next one has a graphic. I'll see if we can do this without the graphic because it's not here in the text file. What?
Maybe not until we know what the graphic is.
No, well, I don't even know what the bloody graphic is. It's talking about a handheld scanner. Skip it. I'm going to say ridiculous. Any of those scanners will turn hard copy image into an electronic piece of stuff.
I'd say the answer would be a handheld because it's probably more limited than a flatbed is.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's more limited, yeah. I'm a silly customer for purchasing it. Right, okay, let's have a look at question 8 anyway. Okay, how is the speed of a laser printer measured? A, dots per minute. B, pages per minute. C, pixels per second. D, pages per second. And E, pages per week.
Oh, I had to answer E to that.
B's there.
Well, put it this way, we wouldn't be the lady at Premier and Cabinet if it was pages per week, would we? She would have long since run away in tears.
It's Peter, Paul and Mary.
There you go, Peter, Paul and Mary. How about that? Okay, so it's B for those people. What is the advantage of a network printer over a local printer? A, a network printer is cheaper to purchase. B, it has higher resolutions. C, it is used by multiple people. And D, it is easier to install and takes less time to configure. Go now. Okay, those who got
D,
C.
It was C.
C, those who got C, where it's, it can be used by multiple people are correct. Question 10. Okay, a student using a Windows XP machine sends a print job to a printer. A student sends a print job on a Windows XP machine to a newly connected printer. However, the print job fails. Which tool can be used to verify the configuration of the port the printer is connected on? Okay, A, Device Manager. B, System Control Panel. C, Add Hardware Wizard. D, the ports tab of the printer properties. Go now. Hey, guys, let's have
Excellent.
A look. Were they B's or D's that got typed?
It's that they were D's.
Good. Okay, we've got to watch the English teachers here. The port being the operative word, not the device. Watch out for it in the exam, gang.
Yeah, beware linguistic traps because Cisco is full of them. And that, gang, is another lecture under your belts. So thank you very much. We've gone over time. I just want to say before we leave, there is one lab in this section and Grace is not going to make her class do it. So I'm not going to make you do it either. What I would encourage you to do, though, if you have the time, is instead of installing the all-in-one on the lab, is to choose an all-in-one from the net, anyone you like. Get down its manual or its documentation and write me a report on how you will install it because it's good practice of reading it and interpreting manuals. And as I said, as a tech, you need to learn to do that a lot. So, but if you don't really want to do it or you haven't got time, I'm not going to make you. So it's just something I would encourage you to do if you would like to and fairly need that practice. Has anyone got any questions or comments before we leave for today?
Kylie, does it have to be an all-in-one that includes the fax? I'll only be a second, Mel. Can it be, like mine, for instance, is just a scanner printer?
Okay. I've never seen just a scanner printer. It doesn't really... Yeah, it could be your one if you've got
Mine's
the documentation.
Mine's just a scanner printer. Doesn't matter, just any old pile of junk you get. I mean, combination printer you get off the net.
Yeah, because I could actually uninstall and reinstall mine if I, you know, to do the lab.
You could if you really wanted to.
Did you install it?
Critical.
Yeah, or else if you want to, you can just write a report on how you installed it rather than making significant changes to your computer.
Yeah, well, I've installed it about 3 times, once or twice on my machine after different OS changes, and a couple of times on my daughter's machine after a couple of OS changes.
Oh, so you know what you're doing. Tell Kylie you know what you're doing. I put the disk in and went install, next, follow the bouncing ball, job done.
And then I had to do it again because the scanner installs separately from the printer.
There you go.
Uh-huh, well then, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. That's fine with me.
Okay, I really have to go. I think I've got a call waiting for me, so I'll see you all guys next week.
See you later, Kate.
Well, thanks for coming, folks. It's been another really good session. You've all been great, as usual. And yell if you need help.
Okay.